At last, of this occult material, I read the conclusions made by the publisher and Mr. Walter Buehler. I think he published the Spanish one. And conclusions, it says, it is in it that moves. Those were the words spoken by the celebrated Italian astronomer Galileo Galilei of the Middle Ages. If those words were not authentic, at least they expressed the struggle of science of that age in the sense of giving value to the colossal and revolutionary truth that reduced the Earth to as a central point in of the universe, to the position of a mere solar satellite. In the present days, a great philosophical transformation comparable to the time of Galilei is taking place, and we are perhaps in the eye of another collapse of ideas because, with the recent penetrations of this, our planet, by civilizations from space, more advanced than the terrestrials, Homo sapiens, who can hover in the air also, and leave no doubt about their technical superiority, as well as their basic philosophy. However, those beings from space, though much stronger than us, have not tried to conquer us, despite possessing total capability to do so at any time. We have observed them since antiquity, according to the reports of ancient historians, as is definitely clarified now, in view of the actual demonstrations of the presence of these civilizations in our space. We must devote all our forces, both scientific and moral, in the coordinated effort to frankly and openly study the question with regular and immediate information to the public concerning this situation. Instead of this, we see a world conspiracy on such a gigantic scale as to deny and distort the material evidence over the last 20 years. Without doubt, this could not have been carried out without the exclusion of elements of our community with sufficient intellectual discernment and knowledge. Apparently, this is due to discourage respect by such elements as those who direct a professor of the Roman Rite of the Catholic University in San Pablo, Prof. Jao de Freitas Guimarães, who had a personal experience with beings from another planet, and said, "The greatest pity is that persons who I judge to be cultists reveal themselves incapable of admitting the facts." It means the existence of beings from outer planets and their coming to us. At least with the seriousness of an investigator who admits an hypothesis. Instead, they form fully illustrated convictions contrary to the reality if the fact and come authorized and consecrated in a stupid smile. In the past and also in the present, the tribes of our planet generally orient themselves are still oriented by motives of rape and the exercise of power to repress the weak, all justified by their instincts for survival. To be able to take advantage of the actual proceedings of the man of the flying discs, we must keep in mind that they are bringing the unbalanced launching of all our technology in the direction of space. Perhaps we will see them in a very different light that we imagine, being with justified preoccupations in virtue of already having even A and H bombs in space orbits. It is inconceivable to our actual manner of thinking that there could be possibly exist other beings stronger than us that secretly feel curiosity, if not now, perhaps until sympathy or paternal friendship of the most strong, most intelligent and most evolved of the most for the most weak here on earth, who are engaged in an unbridled race to their self-destruction. And this because we exactly lack vision and long experience, which in space other civilizations surely already possess. It actually seems that we are so imbued with the philosophy of our political truths that neither at least accept discussions concerning the business of the flying discs, charging it a foolishness, charlatanism, utopic religious cult, etc. In a way, today they try to suppress the movements of our conscience. For example, the great atomic psychist Oppenheimer was charged as crazy by his inquisitor Dr. Robb when he expressed fears about the political application of energy discovered by him and his group, eventually to be used to provoke our own apocalyptic holocaust. On the other hand, the proceedings of Nuremberg registered perfect cessation, which was expressed in the revolt against the political aberrations that occurred. He who reads this narrative of Dr. Arthur Burlett and meditates on it will remember it for truth of experience with the UFO occupants similar to those of George Adamski, Professor Freitas, Guy Meras and Antonio Rossi. We should be conscious to the fact that we are confronted by a real problem with our share of responsibility to face it seriously, with respect to our community and in accordance with our intellectual and moral talents. Who knows if certain groups of students of this business have not finally begun to identify those flying objects with extraterrestrials and create then a science of this subject to be considered in public forums instead of silence, to include in their study the entire totality of the subject, not only militarily but scientific as well, including the technology of propulsion of these discs. This appropriately by bringing great political temptation is investigated avidly by the military, but that represents only a small fraction of the problem, and no doubt is justified to hide the gigantic question behind the curtain of silence and secrecy on the part of that fraction of the community, which is now has enjoyed the entire confidence of the nations of which they are a part. Films such as Us Invasors in Brazil and We here in the United States transmit to the public through the TV stations the deformation of the matter, perhaps always presenting the visitors as hostile to man on earth, and tend to deviate it toward the the military field. The truth said in public never generates panic and never prejudices anyone. We now pass the ball then to the reader to consider according to his conscience. Signed by Walter K. Buehler, November 1967. Then, at last, is also publisher's comment. Publisher was Wendell Stevens. We have presented here the translated account of only the first abduction of Arthur Burlett by the Akkartian extraterrestrials as contained in his 14 notebooks. This, however, was not the end of Arthur Burlett's contact with the Akkartians. Just as they told him, while still on their own planet, they would like to maintain contact with him later, after returning him to Earth, and requested his cooperation in such contacts. They have, true to their word, done so, even up to today. Burlett underwent such unpleasant personal experiences, castigation and harassment as a result of word of these abductions getting out locally, that he never reported his fellow-on experiences to anybody outside of the small group of professionals directly involved in the long-term investigation of this case. This group included a doctor, an attorney, a cleric, a governor official, and a police officer, among others, none of whom shall be identified here, and the case has been truly investigated and documented by these men, who to this day remain convinced of the reality of the phenomenon being observed. In retrospect, the Akkartians seem to have been correct in their analysis of the situation and their modified strategy towards Earth. We have, as they predicted, gone from a few hundred atomic weapons to many thousands on hand and ready to use. We have already agreed to actually use them at least 3 times during delicate world situation, and that is from within just one atomic weapon possessing nation. They know that any use will almost immediately get out of control. With their remarkable data gathering facilities, they are privy to the deepest secrets of all governments and individuals, and know exactly when events transpire. Their predictions based on their collected informations and analyses are that we will, within the next generation, engage in atomic conflict, destroying most of the life of this planet. They are prepared. They stand ready to preserve necessary plant stocks before they perish, so that this planet may be re-vegetated so quickly as possible for them. This objective does not hold for the suicidal and aberrant species of humanity on this planet, who have willfully prepared their own end. Will we, as they predicted to Burlett, hand our planet over to them, uncontested, as they say? They foresee this within the next few years. They even believe the few survivors will welcome them with open arms. Do you agree? That was the last of this book. And also in this book is some words at last on the Mario Restier case that I also can read. There was an earlier abduction to an Earth human who was also taken away to an alien extraterrestrial's home planet, and this one occurred in Brazil as well. This particular case may in fact be the first known case of UFO abduction in modern times. At last, it is the first reported case of this kind on record. This abduction actually took place on the 4th of December 1949. There was no way that Arthur Burlett could have known of this case before he wrote his narrative accounts, since it happened far from Sarante and was in fact not reported out of the abductee's immediately family circle and published until 68. Likewise, the abductee in this case knew nothing of Burlett and his account, and besides, the family of this abductee knew of his experience ever since his return to Earth in 1950. In this case, the abductee was gone for a phenomenal 4 months before he was returned safe and healthy, and there were other witnesses and even an artifact as objective physical evidence in support this abductee's story. Parra Mensa, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, 4th of December 1949, 5 o'clock. P.M. In the Diario de Noticias, dated February 6, 68, journalist Carlos Neto described a trip to another planet that was reported by a functionary of the CIA, Siderurgical National Shelter, in the Volta Redonda neighborhood of the state of Rio de Janeiro. Sir Mario Restier received the journalist in his home with a welcoming friendliness on that 1st of February of the same year, in the house of Volta Redonda, who is resided where his wife and three children. At this time, Mario, then 40 years old, had been employed by a steel plant for 15 years, where he was a master foundry man. His UFO abduction and space trip took place 23 years earlier, when he was 17 years old and a bachelor living in a room in Villanova, a suburb near Barramansa in Rio State. He worked at that time for the journal the Rua Pure Purple Journal of Barramansa in an employee of Sir Leo Diaz. Mario frequently visited his former father, who then resided in Volta Radio, a local near Presidenta Duldra Road. Mario was returning from home from one of those visits to his father on December 4, 49, when he unexpected took place. It was 17 hours in the evening when he noticed, near the place where he was walking, a strange disc-shaped vehicle. It was flying low and without any sound, above a stand of trees, and when suddenly landed some 10 to 15 meters from the road, he was quite surprised to hear a voice that addressed him in Portuguese and said, "Do not be afraid. Would you like to know what this is? We know that you accept us." Mario became frightened. He thought of running, but was sure the disc, with its apparent superiority, could easily move with great speed and catch him. So we then walked toward the disc-like object with these words, "I will come there if you will guarantee my return and safety." As he approached the ship, he saw a port open in the craft, where he could see two occupants of size and stature about like his own, who were making friendly gestures and signs of welcome. They were dressed in some garments quite different from ours, a kind of Roman toga, and had a kind of small fabric cap on their heads. full of curiosity, Mario asked them, "Do you believe in God?" and received the response, "God is one only." This gave Mario more courage, and then he went up into the vehicle. He was conducted along a corridor to a room with many viewing screens and panels. They were set in among and between many buttons and controls and what looked like luminous and phosphorescent panels with chimes that displays the movement of the ship in space. They said they were taking him on a trip and asked him to remain inside a kind of cubic urn or bath tube filled with some kind of liquid which, as they explained, served to reduce the inconvenience of great accelerations and also would nourish his body. Should be nourish. Once again he was assaulted by fears, but then they assured him that they possessed the means to cut the lines of force of Earth, which they called Terra, as in Portuguese. He was then immersed in the liquid with all of his clothes on, leaving only his eyes and nose exposed. A little later, when he felt more calm, the speaker of the group advised him, "We are now traveling." He had the sensation of falling rapidly asleep. Noticed the diffuse light, he did not see a sun. He saw gigantic transparent domes, kilometers in extent, that covered the whole city in such a way that where one ended, another began, and they were connected. They gave him refreshment in a little room of the factory making the raw material, and he enjoyed it in company with his escorts. The flavor of the food reminded him of the sweetness of a tropical fruit. They explained that it was an alimentation highly purified and that it left no residue upon digestion. Mario found that this was because of the absence of parasites, bacteria, and was consequently enabled to at the 300-year normal longevity of those people. After a time that seemed like a morning and an afternoon on Earth, perhaps 6 to 8 hours, he began to feel tired and asked to return home. They had already guessed his feelings after the visit to the fourth factory and said, "We know that you are wanting to return." They took him to a ship identical to one in which he had arrived. It had a diameter of 15 meters and they put him on board. They bid him goodbye by each of them pronouncing a syllable in a musical voice. He was impressed by the singular feeling that he could not decide which of the six was in charge or chief of the group, because he had seen no sign of distinction between them. Their clothes were greenish and had a long lateral pocket on the left side. The garments of the other people that he had seen had a blue and or a green hue. Their eyes were black or green. The mouth was small. They had no skin, hair, and wore a kind of small fabric cap on their heads. The nose and eyes were not noticeably abnormal. He noticed no repairs to their teeth. He saw women among them who were all attractive, and also saw children, always holding the hands of adults. He never saw any children jumping or playing. On the return trip, the whole process was reversed from that of going. The crew immersed him in that cup of liquid again. Afterward, they dried his body and the garments in the small compartment as before and gave him his own clothes. taking their clothes back in exchange. Mori began to think that the spaceship crew acted and spoke more like robots than human beings. They were not like the people he met on that planet, and they did not carry on conversation like the others. Nevertheless, he did not see any others like them on the planet either, except in the ship. Upon returning, the landing was not in the same place as the pickup, but nearby. In 10 minutes he walked to his father's house. Mario was surprised to find his father angry and about his absence for a period of 4 months. His father thought he could have at least told somebody in the family before this where he was. He was amazed to learn that this was April 14, 1950. His father had written to his brother in Rio de Janeiro. There were 6 altogether, seeking any information they might have on Mario's disappearance. On the other hand, it seemed to Mario that the trip had taken only 3 days, at the most. When he related his experience to his father, it was at first interpreted as an expedient on the part of the son to cover his absence or something else he might be involved in. However, in time his father began to give more credit to Mario's story in view of developments pertaining to the piece of alien raw material brought back by his son. The material would neither melt nor burn despite being opaque and delicate, but on the contrary seemed plenty resistant, but it would not bend or break when a heavy weight was placed on top of it, and it permitted the boiling of water in a kettle when it was used to support it above a flame. In view of the unusual phenomena involved, difficult to explain by any means, the father counseled Mario to not divulge the story or any information about it to anyone. Of his experience until this moment, it is a great enigma how his absence of 4 months and 10 days could seem to him like only 3 days. Date written Carlos Neto on February 6, 1968. This is the last of this book. Then I think all the upreading from this Accord case and more are finished.